It is Tuesday, October 28th. We welcome you to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com/CBSSports and use the offer code FUN. I'm Adam Azer with Al Melchior and Scott White. We're looking at first base rankings, an early look at 2015 first base rankings. And let me get your World Series prediction, Scott White.
The World Series that's most of the way over, you mean?
That's right.
He's giving us a little
advantage. It could still go either way.
Yeah.
Game six tonight.
I'd like for the Royals to come back, but I kind of have a feeling the Giants are going to wrap it up tonight. It's my gut feeling.
Yeah, so I guess I can't go like Royals in four now, huh?
You can. I can't go. I'm still going to stick with Giants in five. I think they're not even going to play tonight.
I thought it was going to be Giants in six, but now
really?
I don't. Yeah, but now I don't. Now I think it'll be Giants in seven.
Giants in seven. All right, Bumgarner gets the save.
Yeah.
He's pretty good. We'll talk about him in just a second. Yeah, I'll say Giants wrap it up tonight, but I hope it goes seven. And I wouldn't mind seeing the Royals win. It'd be fun. That place would go nuts.
Yeah.
Game seven home win. Always good to see.
Like a good underdog story.
There you go.
Yeah.
Here are your injuries, news, and notes presented by Squarespace. We're not going to really talk about this. Oscar Tavares, unfortunately, dying in a car accident on Sunday. Just really, really sad. And just no need to get into fantasy or anything like that. So our thoughts are with anyone involved there, and it just stinks. Some more prospect news. Minnesota outfield prospect Byron Buxton, he dislocated a finger in the Arizona Fall League. So now he's had a wrist injury, a concussion, and now this dislocated finger, and this is a top prospect. What's the deal with Buxton? What should his dynasty league owners be looking at? Keeper league owners. I'm in football mode, sorry.
You can call it dynasty.
All right, yeah.
You know, I'm not really feeling like it's even worth making anything of this. I mean, he's not. It's not like this is what's preventing him from reaching the majors. He still has some work to do in the minors before that anyway. And we could say, oh, look at how much of an injury risk this guy is. But look at Anthony Rendon. He was such an injury risk in college that it dropped him from the first overall pick in the draft, and then he was injured. He missed most of his first minor league season, barely got any time down there, came up, stayed healthy for a full 162-game season, and was awesome. So I don't really know that it means anything at all.
Is he going to play this year in the bigs, Byron Buxton?
I could see a September call-up, maybe.
All right, Kansas City starting pitcher prospect Kyle Zimmer has a shoulder injury, but it may not be that bad. And that concludes your prospect news. Now let's talk, you know, guys that are actually in the league. Madison Bumgarner, he finished as a top nine starting pitcher, ninth in points, eighth in Roto. And he's just out of his mind. 0.29 ERA in the World Series in his career. That's amazing. Having a great postseason with a 1.13 ERA. Do you think Madison Bumgarner will get overdrafted because of his stellar postseason?
I think he probably will, which is not, it's not really that meaningful because he's a top 10, top 12, I think probably top 10 starting pitcher going into next year. I don't think anybody's going to take him first off the board ahead of Kershaw or Felix, anybody like that. But yeah, maybe instead of going ninth or tenth, he goes third, conceivably,
right.
Third, fourth, fifth.
This is hardly a new thing for him. I mean, he's had dominant postseasons before. Why would
I don't know, I just feel like there's so much
different.
More hype.
Yeah, I think it's just
this is his most dominant postseason. I mean, he's thrown 47 2/3 innings in the postseason. I actually wonder if you're concerned at all about that. He threw 217 1/3 in the regular season, so now he's at like almost 270.
I think I'm not worried about for next year, maybe, you know, another year or two down the line if this continues. But since the Giants only do go to the postseason every other year, I think that he's fine. And just to get to Scott's point about perception this year versus past years, I think maybe it's just the cumulative effect that he continues to be dominant in postseason just kind of adds to the legend.
He's also younger than people might realize. So maybe they look at him and say, okay, he's the next just short of Kershaw. I don't think anybody expects anyone to be Kershaw, but maybe he's still getting better and better, and next year he becomes the second best pitcher in baseball.
Like I was saying too, it's a fine line because you could argue. I mean, he's already in the discussion as the second best pitcher in baseball. It's pretty much Kershaw and then everybody else.
Well, we've seen what good postseason runs can do to players' fantasy values.
I got people asking me about Mike Moustakas for next year.
There you go, Trevor Rosenthal. I mean, that was right last year.
Yeah.
Okay. Houston may remove that stupid hill from center field by 2016. Joe Maddon is no longer the Rays manager. Shockwaves.
That was the shocker, yeah.
Sarcasm, right?
I was absolutely stunned.
You were?
I really was, yeah.
I wasn't. As soon as Friedman left, I wasn't really that surprised.
Yeah, I guess I bought Maddon's whole thing about how he was going to stay with the Rays. But to kind of give myself a little credit, Scott and I were actually just talking about this. Maddon himself didn't know he had an opt-out clause.
Is that right?
Until after it was viable for him because it was tied to Friedman's departure.
He didn't know about it?
And he didn't know about it.
That guy doesn't know anything, man. So unprepared. is going to have an effect on Rays players?
I don't think so. I've seen some people, you know, tweeting to that effect that they think that now the Rays are going to go completely down the tubes. But I mean, you still have, you know, remnants from the previous regime, and I imagine they'll continue to hire good people and get good players.
Yeah, I'd worry about it less on like an individual player by player basis than just the cumulative effect on the team as a whole. I'm not downgrading any individual Rays based on this news.
And the New York Daily News reports that Boston coaches hate Yoenis Cespedes.
There's actually something that just came out like 15 minutes ago saying that the Red Sox were denying that they hate Cespedes.
less shocking than the Joe Maddon.
I would hope they'd deny it.
Yeah.
They just kind of let that hang out there. That would have been pretty awkward.
Give me a round for Cespedes.
Let's say 7.
That sounds about right to me.
Actually, I was going to trade you to him for a round of beer. That's what I meant by that. Oh. Give me a round, I give you Cespedes.
But you don't drink.
Yeah, that's how much I dislike Cespedes. All right, I want to remind everybody, today's podcast brought to you by Squarespace, where you can easily create your own professional website or online portfolio. Very, very easy to use and very cheap. That's two things you're going to want to look for when you're making a website. Get on a Squarespace right now and just start designing. It's going to look good on every device every time. It's going to look great on mobile, on your computer, on your tablet, whatever it is. Squarespace starts at just $8 a month. And if you sign up for a year, you get a free domain name. Now, if you have any trouble, make sure you get that customer support 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Really good customer support from Squarespace. Start a free trial. No credit card is required. And start building that website today. And when you sign up, use the offer code FUN to get 10% off and show your support for our podcast. We want to thank Squarespace for sponsoring our Fantasy Baseball Today show. That's Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website. We'll read some emails in a little bit. Our email address is fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Please put baseball podcast in the subject line, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. First base rankings for 2015. We'll look at Al's top 12 first. Miguel Cabrera, number 1. Paul Goldschmidt, number 2. Jose Abreu, number 3. Edwin Encarnacion, number 4. How many first-round picks did I just name?
4.
But possibly. 2 for sure. I'd say actually 3 for sure.
And then Encarnacion.
Yeah, kind of at the turn somewhere.
I want to take Goldschmidt ahead of Miguel Cabrera. I want to do it.
That he was crazy on fire in September when he was playing on a fractured ankle. Imagine what he can still do if he actually gets healthy.
But that's the problem. I fear that he's not going to be healthy. You know, he'll be healthy enough, but Cabrera's going to be 32 next season, 2 years in a row where he's dealt with injuries. He's having off-season surgery on that ankle. I feel like the arrow is going down for Cabrera. Still very, very high, highest arrow, you know, at the position, but it's going down. Whereas Goldschmidt, two straight years, 300, 400, 545, basically.
I mean, he's already reached the climax of his career, so the arrow is roughly going down.
Right.
But I don't think it's just going to be a straight down. I think there's going to be another slight upward movement here.
Okay.
As he has a healthier 2015, presumably.
You also have Miguel Cabrera number one and Goldschmidt two and Abreu three and Encarnacion four.
Yeah. Yeah. How about that?
And?
Well, yeah, all right. Breaking it down four at a time here. So, no worries with Goldschmidt. I mean, he missed 53 games. He had a broken hand. But he's a stud, right?
He is a stud. And, yeah, top four or five pick overall.
Jose Abreu, post-All-Star break, had a very strange slash line. He batted 350, but only seven home runs. You worried at all looking at his second half? Wasn't great in terms of power?
No, not really.
I need you to understand that I have to come up with talking points.
Yeah, and we have to try and come up with an answer that sounds intelligible. I mean, my whole thing is he hit 351, so... Yeah. If there was some trade-off with power there, I don't think anybody really missed it as an owner of his. And I think I would expect the final line, even if the halves were slightly different, to be about the same next year.
And that would be 36 home runs and over 100 RBI. So out of Cabrera, Goldschmidt, Abreu, and Encarnacion, who's the most likely to be a bust?
You know, it probably is Cabrera for the reasons you mentioned, but he's also the one who's most likely to, you know, create a tier unto himself at the top of the position and win another MVP award and all of that. So it might be a matter of how deep the league is, whether or not he's really the first baseman taken in yours.
I actually worry just a little bit about Goldschmidt, too, just... you know, coming off the hand injury, you know, and that sort of made it a little easier for me to put Cabrera first. So I think Goldschmidt maybe gets off to a slow start and could be a little disappointing.
5, 6, 7, 8 in your first base rankings.
This is where it gets different.
Yeah, Al goes Rizzo, Victor Martinez, Freddie Freeman, Adrian Gonzalez. Rizzo, Victor Martinez, Freddie Freeman, Adrian Gonzalez. Scott goes Rizzo, Freeman, Martinez, instead of Martinez, Freeman, and then Pujols, 8, and no Adrian Gonzalez in the top 12.
Ooh.
Whoa.
All right, so Rizzo, 5. How far behind Encarnacion is he for you guys?
Pretty far. There's a decided teardrop here. Not crying or anything.
Yeah, no, it's all right, buddy.
I would say it's probably... more so in points leagues than Roto because Encarnacion, low strikeout rate, but typically a not-so-great batting average, so that boosts him in points leagues further ahead of Rizzo. But I agree that that's the change in tier there, but it's such a top-heavy position that you're talking about. At least for me, it's a first-rounder in Encarnacion and a second-rounder in Rizzo.
Second round Rizzo for you?
Yes.
Then number 6 for Al is Victor Martinez, who at age 35 had a career season. And perhaps the most amazing is at 70 walks and 42 strikeouts, and he hit 32 homers. And number 6 for Scott is Freddie Freeman. You guys have Freeman and Martinez 6 and 7 in some order.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Well, yeah, and that was a tough one to figure out who to put ahead. And it could go either way, but I don't have, in terms of making a projection for him, I'm not going to really expect a big increase in production for Freeman. He's certainly at the age where he could do that, but he sort of plateaued a bit last couple of years. And so I think just in terms of what my draft day expectations are for Freeman, I'm going to draft him pretty much as the guy he's been in 2014, whereas Martinez, I certainly expect a big drop-off from him because what he did, I still don't understand it.
Right.
It was crazy and unexpected, but he can fall a long way and still produce more than Freeman will.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, I mean, for it, as hard as Martinez is to predict coming off the season he just had, one, it was a career season, and at an age when you would normally expect him to begin his decline, so how big of a decline is it going to be from one year to the next? I'm kind of surprised that we both were as close on him in these rankings as we were. For me, I just decided it was going to be, okay, the first baseman who I think have a real shot at elite potential or at elite numbers without much risk, I'm going to rank ahead of Martinez so that he's the bottom one of that group with all his risk. And that included Freeman for me, even though, you know, and it Martinez's best case scenario is probably better than the most likely scenario for Freeman.
Yeah.
And then Adrian Gonzalez, eighth for Al. Where do you have him, Scott? I know he's not in your top 12.
He is 13th.
Okay.
Just missed.
So he led, he led the position in RBI last year, and he had 27 home runs, which was really pretty solid bounce back for him. Gonzalez finished as a top 8 first baseman. Why not in your top 12? Why 13th, Scott?
Well, there's a couple reasons. The biggest, I think, is that there's kind of a philosophical difference between Al and I and the way we choose to rank players who are eligible at multiple positions. My thinking is you make a rank list. It's for people to draft those players in the order you have them ranked. So players like Carlos Santana, Todd Frazier, Buster Posey, because they're eligible at weaker positions than third base, they're going to go earlier than a pure first baseman who might be projected to outscore them.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, maybe I would have Gonzalez ahead of those three, and it would close the gap some. The one player who I think we really disagree on here relative to Gonzalez is Albert Pujols, who I have ranked ahead of him at eighth at first base, so ahead of those three multi-eligible players as well. And Al doesn't. Al has Pujols, 11th. What, 12th?
11th. I have 12th. So we pretty 12th. Much have. We have them.
I'm sorry. You have 12th. My bad. I said 11th. I'm an idiot. Please ignore me.
Okay. Yeah, we
a lot
get
of people
the idea.
In this building have been waiting for me to say that for a while.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, Pujols, so we pretty much have those two flipped, Gonzalez and Pujols. And, yeah, I mean, they've. I just Gonzalez this year reestablished himself as a power threat, and Pujols did a little bit, but I just think the overall pattern with him is one that's more strongly marked by decline than Gonzalez. So that's really for me the difference, because they both bat in lineups where I think they're going to have a lot of run producing opportunities. Probably hit. I think Gonzalez probably hit for a slightly higher average, but. Yeah, I just expect Gonzalez to have a little better staying power as a power producer than Pujols.
He did reestablish. Well, okay, he had a bounce back season in terms of power. He had 27 home runs, and he hadn't had that many since 2011 in a season. But I don't know that I'm ready to conclude it was reestablishing himself as a player hitter, as in that's what we can expect from him going forward. For starters, come the end of August when I first started ranking first baseman, he was down at like 15th or 16th for me because he needed a 8 home run September to get to those 27 home runs. His year was looking a lot worse before then. And then there's just the matter of, okay, it had been close to 5 years since he had done that, and Gonzalez still had a worse year than Pujols, who, in my mind, could potentially even be better than he was just because of those 71 strikeouts and 633 at-bats. I mean, that is an insane ratio for a player with 30-homer power. And if he just lucks into a few more hits next year, then he's distancing himself from Gonzalez even more. When, like I said, that to me seemed like a best-case scenario for Gonzalez.
Pujols had a pretty decent edge over Gonzalez, about 30 points in points leagues, but in Roto, they're almost the exact same player. Batting average, very similar, and they finished within two spots of each other. I mean, they're back-to-back in first baseman rankings, but overall, Pujols 27th and Adrian Gonzalez 29th, and their slash lines are very, very similar. I was surprised that Gonzalez had 27 home runs. I wanted nothing to do with him.
Yeah, and 27 is an impressive number. I know it doesn't. We're all still kind of recalibrating
yeah.
because of the way the game has changed over just the last 5 years. 27 home runs was among the league leaders in the National League. It was a high number, even though to some people it may not sound like it.
So I'm just looking at first base now and thinking back to last year. I think I kind of felt better about like round 8 to 11 first baseman last year. Depending on when you were drafting, Jose Abreu was in there. Anthony Rizzo was in there. I'm not sure about Adrian Gonzalez. I don't think so. I think he went earlier. But I'm looking at this list, and I kind of want a top five guy. Top four or five. I kind of want Miggy, Goldschmidt, Abreu, Encarnacion, Rizzo. Might prioritize a little bit more. Because then you're looking at, you know, Carlos Santana, Frazier, Pujols. Or Carlos Santana, Frazier, I'm playing them at third. And yeah. Then I see the risk in Pujols and Gonzalez. And Votto, I don't want anything to do with Votto and Roto, maybe in points. He just seems a little risky to me. How are you guys feeling about that? It seems more top-heavy this year than I think it was last year.
I totally agree with that. And, yeah, it's looking a little bit more the way that outfield looked to me last year and still kind of looks to me, which is if you don't grab one in the first two rounds, you're taking on a lot of risk. And even Anthony Rizzo, who Scott and I both have ranked fifth right now, I don't completely trust him to come back with the same kind of year he had this year. It's been a lot of inconsistency in his young career. So, yeah, one of the top four would be nice to get. And if you don't, then I'm probably holding out for Votto. I mean, not necessarily because there's some good names between Encarnacion and Votto, but I think Votto could have a very big bounce back year. Really, I think it all depends on his health. And yeah. He could be a legitimate top five guy, and you could get him a lot later, I think.
He could be, but to Adam's point, I mean, he's missed a significant portion of, what, the last two seasons with injuries, or two of the last three, something like that. And the power number, there was some concern about the power numbers apart from that.
Right, that's why I specified with Roto. I just don't know that I want a first baseman that I can't depend on for 20 home runs in a Roto league.
But the thing is, there's still enough, like, super elite players at first base, four players we're talking about drafting in the first round, that if you don't get one of them, you're at a significant disadvantage. And maybe Votto ends up being a bargain one of those, but maybe he's a bust again. Maybe Prince Fielder comes back from neck surgery and starts playing like Prince Fielder again, but there's a lot of risk there too. Maybe Matt Adams finally is the 30 homer guy we wanted him to be this year, but maybe he's just a 16 homer guy again, you know? There's a lot of upside in the players beyond the top seven or eight, like you were talking about, Adam, but there's enough downside that you still probably want to try and secure one of the big names and get one of those other guys as your utility player or something like that.
Yeah. And yeah, if I do wind up, let's say, holding off and getting a Votto and knowing I'm doing so with a lot of risk, believe it or not, probably the first name that popped into my head in terms of how do I kind of protect myself against the risk, Chris Carter. You look at the way he finished the season. I know, I can't believe I'm saying it, but you look at the way he finished the season, I think he could, he's certainly going to provide power and, you know, maybe not as much of a liability for batting average as he appeared to be, you know, say at midseason.
So looking past number eight, we mentioned the names like Joey Votto. It's going to be in different orders, but Joey Votto, Carlos Santana, Todd Frazier, Pujols, Buster Posey, guys like that. Frazier had a pretty bad second half, 247 with 10 home runs and 27 RBI. The Reds were just awful after the All-Star break. And Frazier is like so good when he's good and so bad when he's bad. You know, so where would you feel comfortable taking him?
Well, the thing about Frazier for me is I ranked him lower at both first and third base than his totals said he should rank based on what he did in 2014. And it's not so much the power that concerns me, because he had even a lower slugging percentage than he had 2 years ago. I mean, I feel like that's legitimately Todd Frazier, but the 20 steals, particularly since it wasn't a high success rate, I think he got caught like nine times. It just reminds me so much of that season where Mark Reynolds stole 20-plus bases, and everyone was like, oh, look at this, he's a dual-threat player now. But then he just stopped running after that. The Diamondbacks weren't as motivated to send him, and maybe that had to do with the way the lineup changed around him, or just the, you know, not wanting to expose him to injury, or just the fact that he wasn't successful enough, kind of like Frazier. And I feel like that could easily happen in this case also. And if he's not a 20 steal guy to go along with the 270-ish batting average and 25 home runs, he's less than elite, I would say, even at third base.
Who are the guys that could be this year's Rizzo, this year's Abreu? I mean, I think you mentioned Matt Adams. What about Hosmer? I like Hosmer.
Yep. No, I'm not sold on him yet. Not as a power guy. I sort of think now he is who he is. And, I totally like Adams better as somebody to speculate on. And I already mentioned Chris Carter. I'd say those are the ones that stand out for me.
Yeah, I'm not ready to say Hosmer is who he is because he's been so different over the last 4 years. And if the 2014 version is what we could expect going forward, I'm not sure he's going to have a job much longer. But I think I'm certainly not going to be as willing to invest in him this year as I was last year. I don't even have him in my top 20 at first base. I think maybe the most interesting player from an upside perspective, aside from Matt Adams, is Lucas Duda, who I have 15th.
Yeah.
And before a late slump kind of brought his batting average and OPS back down to size, he was looking like he was looking like he could challenge the top 10 at the position. A lot of on-base ability there, obviously a lot of power, hit 30 home runs. I think he was one of only three National League players to do that, and that was as less than a full-time player to begin the season. So I think Duda, if you do miss out on the elite guys, is going to be a more than serviceable option for you.
I'll throw one more name out there, too. I don't think we've mentioned it all, Chris Davis.
I was going to ask, better bounce-back candidate, Chris Davis or Prince Fielder?
My gut just says Davis, and I can't give you a really great reason other than just I think because it's been more recently that we've seen him be a great power hitter. I'm not sure that the probability of him bouncing back is really that much greater, but they both would be just outside my top 12.
So I think there's some good guys to take flyers on.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think first base is ever going to be a weak position. It's
right.
Just going into 2015... it's maybe less predictable than usual. There's fewer predictable options.
Do you want to hear your ADP from last year?
Let's.
All right. First base. Miguel Cabrera, Paul Goldschmidt, and Joey Votto went in the first 13 picks. Prince Fielder, 4. Chris Davis, 5. Edwin Encarnacion, 6. Beginning of the third round, excuse me. Jose Bautista. Joe Mauer. Where is he? For you guys,
he is now that it probably makes a big difference head to head in roto, significantly more valuable in head to head. I have him 17th, but I have a feeling that's head to head leaning because I have Chris Davis, Brandon Moss, and Mark Trumbo right behind him. Those three would probably be ahead of him in roto.
That's right. About where I have Mauer too.
Freddie Freeman, Buster Posey, Albert Pujols, Carlos Santana, Adrian Gonzalez, Mark Trumbo. Bounce back, anyone?
Like I said, I am 20th. I don't have Chris Carter in my top 20 at all. So they're still like almost the same player to me, but I'm leaning Trumbo coming off the down year.
Very interesting. Why don't you have Chris Carter in your top 20?
Because Trumbo, I feel like, has more of a
It's not versus Trumbo. It's,
well,
overall,
Trumbo's
this guy
20th.
Was yeah. But this guy was one of the best players in fantasy for how long? Over 2 months.
Yeah,
he really was exceptional.
Yeah, he was.
Why not?
Because I feel like if you reduce for a player like Carter, if you reduce his season down to the best stretch. Yeah, he's going to look awesome, but there's going to be terrible stretches in there that we're not accounting for because he strikes out so much to bring that batting average, what I think is going to be safely below 250, maybe close to 220. And I don't think Trumbo or Brandon Moss or any of the few I ranked just ahead of him is going to be so different. But I feel like the upside maybe in batting average is just a little bit higher for them, if only because they've done it before.
He's a good American. Starting on July 4th, that's when he went on his tear in 72 games to end the season. He hit 24 home runs. So, I mean, that was my argument. It wasn't just a stretch for him. It was almost half a season of being really good.
September,
although he slowed down at the end.
Yeah, I think September was pretty bad. So,
yeah, he probably lost people their fantasy championships, but he also probably got them there.
Right.
You know? Yeah. Oh God, he was horrible at the end of the year. Jeez, let's look at this. Ready for this ugly thing? I'm not. Sorry. Kill time.
All right. Well,
see any movies lately?
I was gonna kill time with something baseball related.
No, I got it. Last 20 games, he hit 182 with one home run and three RBI.
Let's not talk about baseball on this podcast.
What are you doing?
Come on.
Sorry.
What were you going to talk about?
Kevin Gausman. Well, just because I'm working on outlooks and projections right now, and just finished the Orioles. I go team by team.
Okay.
And so when you were talking about end of season and getting teams into the fantasy championships, every year there's something at the end of the season that goes under the radar for me until I go back and look. In the last seven starts, Kevin Gausman was really good. And just looking ahead, I think he'll be the Orioles' best starter in 2015.
I love it.
Because strikeout per inning over those last seven starts, only 9 walks in 70 innings.
Now, I hope he doesn't pull a Henry Mejia on us. Because he did that too. But yeah, and he pitched pretty well in the playoffs as well.
Yeah, he did.
I don't think he started any games.
No, 3 relief appearances,
8 innings, 1 earned run. 4 hits, 7 Ks. Okay, cool. Let's do some emails. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. Joe in Tennessee. Dear Michael, Bam Bam, and Buddy.
Bam Bam Mullins, and I don't know who Michael and Buddy are.
This isn't a Flintstones.
Yeah, I mean, the only Bam Bam I knew was the Betty and Barney's
Flintstones,
boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, the Fabulous Freebirds. This is a wrestling thing.
Of course.
Well, the guy
who Freebirds.
Joe, who sent this email, put a freaking awesome video of the Freebirds in in the email. You guys should have watched it. Rate the Mets pitchers in terms of round and value. I'm guessing Wheeler, 13+, DeGrom, 10th, and Harvey, 4th. So is Wheeler the best value? Also, any impact when the fences are moved in at Shea? City Field, Joe.
You know, I think there's going to be a bigger gap. Having already worked on my starting pitcher rankings, I know there's a bigger gap between DeGrom and Wheeler than there is between Harvey and DeGrom for me. I think I have DeGrom 26th at starting pitcher next year, Harvey 15th, Wheeler missed the top 36, though not by much. So as far as specific rounds go, I think maybe DeGrom in the 10th is undervaluing him a little. Harvey in the 4th might be overvaluing him a little. Wheeler in the 13th sounds about right, but I'd rather take the pitchers who I'm confident can deliver ace numbers, and Wheeler's not that yet.
Yeah, no, he's not. And in terms of best value, I think it is DeGrom. I mean, I'm with Scott that I would, if I had to pick one as a keeper, it would be Harvey. In terms of best value for the pick, I actually do think it's DeGrom.
Ryan Harrison from Detroit, Michigan.
Oh, and I don't think the fences are going to matter that much. City Field's already become a pretty decent hitter's park. Nobody's really talking about that.
Ryan Harrison from Detroit, Michigan. Dear Sparky, Jim, and Brad.
Anderson. Leyland.
Mm-hmm.
Osmus.
There you go. In my league, we are trying to determine draft order for next year. Half of the league wants to do worst records draft first and then up the line. I hate this idea because to me it encourages people to tank at the end of the season.
Yes. Yes, it does.
I have suggested that the best record gets first pick, but they hate that also because they argue the more talented players will always win. So can you weigh in with your thoughts on the best way to determine draft order? Should I just do random? Do you have any fun ideas?
Scott does. Right? Well, your league.
Well, is there playoffs in this league? Or is it Roto? I guess if there's playoffs, I've found that the best solution, and we do this in a couple leagues, is for the non-playoff teams to continue playing through the playoffs in a consolation bracket, and the winner of the consolation bracket gets the first pick and then on down the line so that everyone's motivated to stay competitive. But it doesn't automatically go to the best of those teams, and certainly doesn't go to the best team in the league.
Right.
If there aren't playoffs, I mean, you could still do something similar in a roto league, just maybe. Well,
can you
let's
just
see.
Look at standings from like week whatever on, just by based on points where you are, where you're at, who's
well,
game.
Well, I was going to say maybe you know from place five down you start the draft order, but that might encourage the people in third or fourth place to still tank to some degree.
I've never heard of anybody doing, Adam, what you suggested with, you know, picking a starting point and saying, okay, you know, from here on you're playing for draft pick. I like that idea, and it is kind of a counterpart to what Scott does in his leagues, which I love in the leagues with playoffs. So I like that, and if you can't do something like that, I think almost it's better to go to like a random draw for, you know, almost like the lottery system.
And I think that if you're in a 12-team league, and this is just coming to me, you should assign each team in the league a NFL playoff team, since there are 12 of them, and however far they go, it corresponds to the pick you get. And the worst team gets the best overall team in the playoffs. You know, like if it started today, the worst team in the league gets the Broncos.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
There you go.
It's fun. You can't deny the fun factor.
Quite
of that
fun.
Approach.
Johnny in Jamaica, dear Joker, Bane, and Riddler. I am torn on my keeper for next year. There's Waka and there's Cole. Who do you like, Waka or Cole?
Cole.
Yeah, me too.
Just a lot safer. And Al talked about Gosman down the stretch. Take a look at Cole's numbers down the stretch. After he came back from his injury, he was the strikeouts were up. Everything else was down. He was ace-like.
From Adam, hey, Hickory, Dickory, and Doc. 10-team Roto League. Start two at every infield position. Plus 6 outfielders, 8 starters, and 2 relievers. It is an 8x5 league with on-base, hits, and slugging as the extra categories. So, I guess hitter heavy. I can keep any player, no penalty, keep as long as you want. So give me 5.
Yeah, give me 5.
Give me 5. Yeah, I got gotcha. Right, I see where you were going with that.
Glad I'm not the only one. Yeah. Jose Abreu, Anthony Rizzo, Jose Altuve, Hanley Ramirez, Carlos Gomez, Yasiel Puig, Justin Upton, Nolan Arenado, George Springer, and Felix Hernandez.
Just 5, huh? That is a stacked group there.
All right, well, I've got Abreu and Rizzo. Yeah, 2 first basemen, and Felix. So those 3 are musts for me. Got to come away with an outfielder here, at least one. So I'm going to go. Carlos Gomez, and then that leaves me 1 pick. Oh, boy.
You didn't take Puig yet?
No, I haven't taken Puig yet.
Oh, I actually feel like I'm going to leave out Rizzo. I'm going to go Abreu, Gomez, Puig, Felix, and Altuve. In that order, Rizzo would be 6th for me.
Yeah, you've talked me into Puig.
Interesting. I left Puig out for Altuve. I went Abreu, Rizzo, Gomez, Felix, and Altuve. Yeah, Puig. Might have to get Puig in there. Interesting.
So I thought Puig was a slam dunk. I guess everybody's a little... Maybe I perceive...
No, I think you're right. I think I'm unfairly downgrading him.
Yeah.
It's yeah. I mean, if you just say 5 keeper league, do you keep Puig? And there's no other context there. I'm saying, of course, yes. But if the cost is I can't keep Altuve or Hanley or Justin Upton, that's a tough call.
But the thing is, I mean, Puig, for projecting already for next year, Puig's an early second rounder for me, and really all 5 of those keepers were early second rounders at worst early second rounders for me. Rizzo, we already talked about. Is a second rounder, and he didn't make my list. So what does that say?
The unanimous ones were Abreu, Felix, and Gomez. So Tim from the ICT, great emailer, says, what's up, Rusty, Dale, and Dave?
Is this a NASCAR-related somehow?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
That's I don't know who Dave is.
Could you guys talk a bit about sim leagues at this point in the year? I'm interested in playing, but I don't know much about them. What kind of league do you play? Where? How is it different than fantasy?
All right. Well, Scott and I both play in them, and we both play in current league sims and in past league sims. Current league sims are awesome because it's the best of all worlds, because you get the, you know, real, you know, in season, you know, drama of, you know, following your team and them having an impact on your fantasy team as you play. And at the same time, you get to construct a lineup, and you have to count for defense and, you know, all sorts of in-game type decisions. So, and we both play in score sheet leagues for that format. Past league sims are fun too.
Oh, well, let's break it down.
All right.
I have a general idea of what sim leagues are, but I've never actually seen one.
Okay.
So,
you know, you know, do you ever play like a baseball video game, like, you know, MVP or whatever, MLB The Show, whatever the big one is now? I don't play a lot of video games anymore.
I haven't played a video game in years.
Yeah.
But sure, I mean, Baseball Simulator 1000.
Yeah, and that's probably a closer comparison.
Yeah,
you set your
sim game.
You set an actual starting lineup, 1 through 9, batting order. You know, you have somebody playing center field, somebody playing all these different positions. There's a pitcher. The pitcher of your team actually faces the batter of the other team, and then there's a result based on what happened for that pitcher and that batter in real life.
In real life, last season, right?
Or it could be current season, yeah.
Does it take like what they did last year and gives you a likely outcome?
Right. So we play in score sheet leagues, and what they do is they simulate results for a whole week of games, typically a six game schedule, based on those players' actual stats from the previous week.
Oh, okay.
So you set a lineup, then the week starts just like, you know, regular fantasy.
Set
a lineup at the beginning of the week, you play the games, and at the end of the week, you get results back for those six or seven, however many games.
See, I like that better, because that means you have to draft and still have draft players that do well this year.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of guys in the office play sim leagues that are based on last year's
stats.
And
we play with them, but yeah, I think, like I was saying, it's best of both worlds when it's just the week before. So you're kind of living out the real-time aspect of it like fantasy, but at the same time you're playing a sim, so that it's a better representation of a real baseball game. You're watching a baseball game play out with an actual pitcher and batter and interface.
And relievers, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Lefty specialists and
yep,
all that.
The whole thing.
Yeah. You know, somebody gets a single, somebody can move them over with a bunt or whatever. It's a real game as opposed to just numbers, as opposed to points just being accumulated according to stats.
Right.
You know?
Do you draft differently?
A little bit, you know, so an A.J. Pollock, a Juan Lagares, that is great defensively. You could draft them a lot higher in that in that format. And like you said, middle relievers can be very important.
Yeah.
So, you know, certainly somebody like a Wade Davis, or I mean probably even somebody even less fantasy relevant, you know, a middle reliever or setup guy with great rate stats is, you know, about as valuable as, or actually can be more valuable than a real life closer.
Well, that's good stuff. Thank you very much. And keep emailing us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. That's it for us today. Back next week with another show. For Scott White, now Melchior, I'm Adam Azer. Adios.